Hey, Startup Hustle listeners, before we get into today's episode, I've got some exciting news to share. If you've enjoyed the insights and stories here at Startup Hustle, you're going to love what we have in store at our brand new podcast called Product Driven. I've always described myself as a product guy first, entrepreneur, software engineer, but really a product guy. I love building products. Many people struggle, though, with how to take a product idea and build a tech product, while software engineers struggle to understand the business side of things and they just don't see the big picture. My new podcast, Product Driven, is about that gap between business and the tech side of building software. It's designed for startup founders, tech leaders, software engineers, and anyone who loves tech and startups. Thank you for being part of this community. Enjoy this episode of Startup Hustle, and please subscribe to Product Driven in your podcast app, and you can also check it out on YouTube. Thank you so much.
And we're back for another episode of Startup Hustle, a podcast for entrepreneurs by entrepreneurs. If you want to start, own, or build a business, then you're in the right place. We bring you the real truth about what it's like to take something from concept to launch. From growth, innovation, experience, failing, or winning big, we've got you covered. So let's get down to business with another episode of Startup Hustle, brought to you by Fullscale.io.
What's up, hustlers? This is Andrew, founder of Marknology, and today's host for all things Startup Hustle, covering e-commerce, Amazon, startups. This is a podcast by founders for founders. We're going to have some fun with this one today. Before we get started, shout out to our sponsor for today's episode, Fullscale.io, helping you build software teams quickly and affordably. I'm excited for today's guest coming all the way from the Czech Republic. Michael, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, super excited to get to chat. I haven't connected with anyone in the Czech in a couple of years, at least around entrepreneurship. So it's going to be fun. Before we get started and we talk about the Diamond Pro and we talk about, you know, your company exactly, I love just starting the show with a little bit of the hero story, getting to know a little bit about you and kind of the why behind, you know, the business and how you got into entrepreneurship. Did you always know you were going to be like an entrepreneur? Was the Diamond Pro something you always had in mind, or was it something you came across?
This was not something I had in mind. And I also love the fact that you're referring to me as a hero. This is the hero backstory. I actually grew up professionally in the corporate side of this business.
Okay.
And I kind of got frustrated with it in many different ways. And I was looking for a lot of changes, and I walked away completely. And a former colleague of mine had, you know, we started discussing this idea, and we found it at that time. It was called Truth About Diamonds. And I never considered the entrepreneurial path, but I guess it's worked out well for me.
Was it something that you did on your own, or like you said, you got approached? Was it something that you did like with a partner or with partners?
My former colleague, when we were working on the corporate side, Ira Weissman, we discussed this. He officially founded it, but I started at the beginning, and we created the site. And it was something where we took our institutional knowledge and started porting it over to an entrepreneurial, aspect of it.
I love that. As someone that's kind of obsessed with e-commerce, and I just love the community, I love the space. Like, I've definitely been creating content for the community, way before it was like intentionality around like getting more business or growing my brand or anything like that. It was just like, I love this space. I want to talk to it. There's not enough information out there on the web. Like, at least, you know, when I got started, that was talking to brands and like, how do brands navigate Amazon? And, you know, there's a lot of fear, like they'll take this, or they take a big percentage, or you can't talk to your customers, or like, you know, all this like kind of content or fear based like knowledge out there. And I wanted to correct it where I could. I wanted to say, no, this is the facts behind how you can navigate this, or this is the facts behind this. And so it was a passion for something that turned into something much more for me too. Let's talk about the early days, because I think that's fun. Were you in the Czech at that time?
We actually started, I was living in Tasmania.
Okay, cool.
I'm originally from New York.
Okay.
And I was living in Tasmania in Australia. and I was heading back to the US, and we decided to get things started. And shortly thereafter, I moved to the Czech Republic. My business partner and I, we worked together in New York, but he's living in Israel, and he was living in Israel at the time. We started this company, and we probably didn't see each other in person for 4 years.
Okay.
Before we actually met again in person. I mean, we're good friends, but you know, just the vet, you know, the way our lives turned out, we were in very different places physically.
What had you in Tasmania?
I was fed up with the corporate world, and I just
I love this. I want to hear this story. Okay,
this is as far from entrepreneurship. I was volunteering on farms.
Okay,
I was traveling. I first started on the West Coast in the U.S. Then I went to New Zealand and did a quick stop in Thailand for a little while, and then I was in Australia and almost a year and a half in Tasmania.
Okay, so volunteering on farms. I've heard a little bit about this from some guys.
Yeah, it's called wolfing.
Okay, and that's how you just like you're able to travel, right? Like you just work on these farms, you get room and board.
Exactly.
Okay, so that's what had you in Tasmania.
Yep. I mean, I was there. I was volunteering at a food co-op, and I was volunteering on some farms around Australia. And it's about as different as a life as you can get from corporate New York City lifestyle.
No, I love that. And what you don't know about me is I grew up in Africa until I was 16. I grew up to missionary parents. So while I'm in KC and in the Midwest, like I definitely have an understanding of travel and third world countries and volunteering, specifically nonprofits, you know, kind of how that world works and the allure to it of, you know, just wanting to see a life so different than, you know, either mine wasn't how I grew up, but I still have that passion in me now to explore new cultures. Like I feel like I'm learning the most whenever I'm traveling and experiencing new things. And even as an entrepreneur, like my creativity is soaring, you know, whenever I'm just experiencing new,
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more.
Like I remember Prague, and I know that, like, you know, that there's a lot of people here in the US that will never make it to Prague. So as much as, you know, people in Europe have been there and things like that, for me, it was very rare. And I just remember like experiencing that and being like, this is, in a way, this is even white culture that just like I had no idea about kind of stuff, you know. And it was just, it was these mind blowing things. And I was telling you a little bit before the show started that when I was first getting started, I think my employee count was 2. So there was 3 of us, you know, right. And I took a trip to the Czech. I was double dipping. I was like exploring, but also I had a client there. We were launching a kid's brand, like a swaddling baby. Like it's something that goes around the dad and the baby. And I, you know, I met him in a pub in like a no-name city, and he brought me wine, and he was very hospitable, and like, you know, English was definitely a second language, and he didn't know much to say, and we kind of just sat there together, and we're just excited to kind of be in each other's presence talking to Amazon, you know. And it was just this it was a very special thing to me, but those are the things that, like, you know, it fueled me in my passion of entrepreneurship and building businesses on e-commerce, because it was like I have this opportunity to work with someone on the other side of the world, chase his dreams around entrepreneurship, and I'm doing it from my computer. And to me, that was just like this light bulb moment.
It's really incredible. I mean, the way that we're able to work globally has really changed our approach to business and just life in general. It does lead to a lot of odd hour Zoom calls, but it is fantastic.
Yeah,
and most of the companies that we work with are actually on the West Coast in the U.S., so that's a 9-hour difference. But you know, as somebody who's obsessed with traveling, I never have a problem getting on a plane.
Yeah. So tell me about. All right. So you're from New York. I actually have been to New York maybe like a dozen times, and really over just the last 2 years. You know, it wasn't like a lifetime of going to New York or anything. Falling in love with Brooklyn, obviously. You know, even Marknology has clients in the East and West Coast, so we have kind of these middle hours at our office where it's kind of a late start, go into the evening, so we can just accommodate as many brands as possible. Tell me about your family, like growing up. Did you grew up into, like, was your dad working with diamonds? Like you said, you grew up in corporate.
Yeah, I mean, when I say I grew up, I meant I grew up professionally. I about halfway through university, I was studying accounting and finance, and I realized that I did not want to go into the banking or accounting worlds under any circumstances. Mm. And my uncle worked for one of the largest manufacturers, diamond manufacturers in the world at the time. And he got me a part-time job doing admin work there. And it's definitely an interesting business, even the corporate side. It's a commodity that's also an end user product, a retail product. So it's very interesting how you manage that business. And I grew to it I grew into it quite well. And I accidentally just fell into a relationship with one of the top clients for the company, one of the largest retail chains on the West Coast. And the diamond buyer there loved me. And that just launched my career. You know, the owner of our company, he was based in Israel. He walked to the New York office. He had no idea who I was. He just saw that in one of the sales rooms that one of the company's top clients was sitting there with somebody who he did not know. And he walked in to, you know, to say hi. And she was effusive in her praise of me. And he went over to the computer. He saw I was doing pretty well on the numbers side as well. And that was it. My career was launched. Cool. I went from admin straight into the management and sales side.
I love that. It's a people business, you know, business at the end of the day, like there is the point of you have to do great work and to be noticed and those kinds of things. But at the end of the day, it's like, it's meeting the right people. I've got some funny diamond stories. I wouldn't say funny. I've got some interesting diamond stories for someone that doesn't come from wealth. There's no reason why I should be around that many diamonds. You know, I rode in a tuk-tuk in Thailand, with an Israeli family that was in the diamond business. And I didn't ask too many questions because I'm smart enough not to, you know, but, I wasn't pushing.
That's pretty normal there. That's fine.
Yeah. We just, you know, I asked them, they were a family, like, they had a couple of kids that were my age, maybe in their 20s. So it was like, you know, that kind of family. We were headed to the full moon festival and, they said, yeah, they were from Israel and they worked in diamonds and they were there on vacation. And we just spent, you know, a few hours together kind of between the tuk-tuk and our first drink probably. Another time, you know, I've had an interest in diamonds. It's always been something that's, I kind of just want to know more based on being from Africa. Yeah. And you know, there was times in Congo and I don't know if people even believe me sometimes when I tell this kind of stuff, but you know, I was 12 to 16 when I was in Congo or somewhere around there. And there was times where I was holding in my hand, raw uncut diamonds, a handful, you know, it would be various Africans coming to my dad, you know, trying to see if he could get diamonds out of the country or is there anything he could do to talk to Europe, you know, about these diamonds and things like that. And if you understand anything about the diamond trade and blood diamonds in Africa, they're not all that way, but there's chaos there. Right. And so people can't imagine holding a handful, you know?
I mean, there is chaos there, but I mean, Congo, I mean, their production is less than 0.1% of the overall industry. You know, the overwhelming majority is coming from South Africa and Botswana.
Yeah, because they're not commercialized, they're not industrialized, they can't get it out. So, you know, there's tons of diamonds there, but I have no idea what actually sells. I just remember, you know, it being something very like just in your face, like, you know, they're just coming by the house with a bunch of diamonds. You know, I think that country is in just such disarray. And I also lived in Botswana as well. Like, so before Congo was Botswana, didn't have any diamond stories there, but a completely different country, you know, as is South Africa too. So, just some, you know, some of those countries run off of, you know, their minerals and their exports and things like that. So it was, you know, it's something that the world cares about. And it was something that I didn't know much about, you know, and so it's always been something that just interests me in that way. Talking about when you guys decide, hey, like, let's create a business around this. Let's go back to that for a second. Your partner is in, you didn't see each other for 4 years. So you guys weren't together. And he's like, I would love to know the timeline on this, but he was like, you know, let's just create a site that is about educating customers on diamonds. And what was the goal like in those days? Was it just to create content? Was it to like, was it affiliate marketing from the beginning?
It was affiliate marketing from the beginning. We never in our wildest dreams thought that we would grow to the size that we have. But the general idea was that, you know, buying a diamond, most people buy one, maybe two or three diamonds or diamond jewelry in their life, pieces of diamond jewelry in their life. And there is absolutely no way that those people walking into a store are a match for the salesperson who's working on commission, who might have some, you know, undesirable items in his inventory that have been dead weight on his books for the last 2 or 3 years. And there's just no way that he's a match from an educational point of view to understand what makes a diamond valuable, what makes it less valuable. And we wanted to help people get the best bang for their buck, avoid different scams. But really, we wanted to just show people how a diamond expert would buy a diamond. You know, people have these misconceptions about quality and whatnot, what qualities they should be going for, and they end up spending their money in all the wrong places. Okay. And, you know, buying a diamond is a zero-sum game. If you're spending on a certain quality, that means you're sacrificing on another quality, or you're just sacrificing on size, unless you have an unlimited budget. And we wanted people to understand that equation a little bit better so that they can make the right decision for themselves.
I love it. That's how I felt about Amazon. That's what I was trying to get at, was like, if you know the info, you're like, you're getting all the wrong info. I want you to actually know so you can make an informed decision on, is this good for your business or not? Not just operate based off of what people are telling you. And I definitely am the person that hates being sold to. Like, I don't mind being sold to if it's great salesmanship. Okay. But when it just feels like, you know, they're just like, hey, you should wear this yellow shirt. You're like, I'm a ginger. I don't look great in yellow. Why are you selling me the yellow shirt? You know, like, not everyone has the ability to stand up to a really strong salesman or saleswoman. So I can definitely understand, like, why you guys created that. Like, what year did the Diamond Pro first come about?
So the Truth About Diamonds, that was our original name. Okay. Now we're the Diamond Pro. We came about 2010.
Okay. So and I was
beginning end of 2009, beginning of 2010. We were very fortunate. We managed to get the website truthaboutdiamonds.com from somebody that we knew, which means that it was already ranked in SEO as an established website. Didn't have any traffic, but the content that we created for it immediately started to get traction. And
thinking about it in 2010, one, that's a prime time for affiliate marketing back in the day. You know, it was like it was still like cruising, and people were talking about it, and it was an e-commerce topic. And two, the forethought, I think, to think of this and like launch at that time was crucial. But I would also say that people's trust around e-commerce wasn't fully recognized either at that time. So you had that hurdle that maybe now people wouldn't think of. But back then, getting people to spend quite a bit of money online was a new concept.
Absolutely. And I mean, there are still people. I mean, it's the percentage of people that are hesitant is shrinking every year. And definitely the last couple of years have accelerated people's willingness to purchase online. You know, buying a diamond is an emotional process in many ways. And people just, you know, definitely more traditional people, older people in that sense, wanted to feel the products. And, you know, I would hear that question all the time. And I'm sitting here, I'm standing in shoes that I bought from Zappos. I mean, you know, I've been buying clothes, buying shoes online for ages already at that point. And I understand that it's a larger purchase, but, you know, from our perspective, it seemed a no-brainer to give buying a diamond online a try. The business model afforded the companies that sell them to sell them at a much lower price because they didn't have the same type of overhead that brick and mortar retailers have.
Yep.
And at the same time, what we just talked about with the salesperson and that lack of knowledge that a customer is going to have walking in, it's impossible to walk in 30 minutes and you're going to be blown away. If the salesperson's good at his job, he's going to do everything he can to make you fall in love with a diamond. And you're sitting there looking at this diamond in a store with perfect lighting that's meant to make the diamond sparkle as much as possible. You're making an emotional purchase. This is sometimes you're going together yep. with your partner. And it's so hard to keep all of those little minutiae in your head to make sure that you don't make a drastic mistake and purchase something that's worth a lot less than you think it should be.
Yeah. And I hate the process of like having to kind of hide your emotions and whatever in order to negotiate with the yeah. salespeople, right? Like if I want to feel excited or happy or like, this is amazing, I want to be able to like look to my partner or whoever and be like, this is amazing. Isn't this beautiful? Without the salesperson be like, ooh, I got them. You know yeah. what I'm saying? Like I don't have to be like rigid and just like, it's cool. What else you got? You know, if I loved it, like I want to love it. And I think that that's something that I feel like in that store. So I'm very much with you. I've also taken on the combat of, you know, before the market was ready to buy stuff online. You know, I've been doing this. I haven't been doing it since 2010. So you got me beat, but I'm 10 years into the industry. And even then there was people, Amazon, you know, was websites were better, but the people weren't buying on Amazon, you know, there's jewelry, fine jewelry now on Amazon. And the two ladies that started that category on Amazon have now gone and created their own site and Etsy and all of that kind of stuff, you know, for the smaller makers that aren't selling as fine in gems. There's, you know, you guys probably paved the way in a lot of ways for, you know, what we're doing now, the big websites that really started getting people used to those kinds of things and feeling more trust there. I think it's a matter of the pros and cons, you know?
Yeah.
Sure, you're buying online. Okay, how do you fix like returns or scams or those kinds of things? Cool, we have these procedures in place, but you're not having to deal with a salesman or only have the stones that are at this shop or, you know, this or that.
Yeah. Like,
I would think that your guys' selection, if you're partnering with multiple retailers, was massive in comparison to anything else out there.
Yeah, and even at that time, I mean, the industry has grown tremendously. The online aspect of the industry has grown tremendously. But even in 2010, Blue Nile was a publicly traded company. They were doing at that point, you know, $200 million, $250 million in sales a year.
Wow.
You had James Allen that was probably doing something similar to that. I mean, these were massive companies that people knew about. If you just do, you know, a quick Google search, you're going to be seeing, you know, chatter on financial blogs and whatnot, whether you should be investing or not. These weren't, you know, if people were really nervous about it being a scam, you know, that's a bit of a stretch. And when you talk about return policies, that's actually the flip side. The overwhelming majority of physical retailers do not offer full refunds. They don't do it. They offer, you know, trade-ins. They let you exchange. Mm-hmm. But if the guy screwed you the first time and then you realize you made a mistake, how exactly are you going to get better value the next time you walk into that store?
Yep. Why would you want to like
every legitimate online retailer is offering 30 or 60 days money back, and they even pay for return shipping usually. So
because in the minds of at least like the retailer, shipping a diamond is nothing. In regards to like just the price point, right? It's a high price point item. It's small. You can probably ship it like, you know, insured or expedited or whatever.
Yeah.
For a fraction of like, let's say a trailer hitch, you know, or something that's just not made for e-commerce. This is funny, but growing up in college before I got into like my career and I went to school for computer science, I was working with a UPS. The shipper, right. You know, I was working in the warehouse and I loaded trucks and, you know, probably a couple times a week. We have a big diamond retailer here in Kansas City called Helzberg, and they're a big, you know,
I'm familiar with them.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. They're a big family in Kansas City as well. Lots of great things to say, but they they shipped a lot of their product through UPS Air. And I would go work in, it was highly secured, and you went in there and it was cold because it was coming out of the belly of a plane, and, you know, we were handling diamonds, and it was kind of cool to know that and just be like, we know that these packages were like, had a bunch of diamonds, and they were moving a lot of product. This would have been like 15 years ago, maybe, or something like that, you know?
You should have seen 47th Street in Manhattan. I mean, I have no doubt. They had like in the parking areas, like just like on the sides of the street, they had them, you know, coned off, and there was usually people with submachine guns there, and you would have all the three major armored car companies would be working, because, you know, we're not just talking about packages to retailers, but there would be a $5-10 million shipment coming from, you know, the manufacturing houses or the sorting houses in Israel, India, or China, and then you would have FedEx. And I remember once it wasn't even somebody trying to steal diamonds. Somebody was, I think, mugging somebody else or trying to pickpocket somebody else. And all of a sudden somebody started screaming. Just out of nowhere, there were like 30 undercover police officers. There were people dressed as Hasidic Jews. There were people dressed as, you know, like everything. You would not even believe this. And they just converged. It was a mistake to try that on 47th Street. I mean,
someone made a mistake pickpocketing that day.
Yeah, it was fascinating.
No, that's cool. Okay, so bringing us back on topic. So you're launching the site, like, you know, you're like, you bought a site, The Truth About Diamonds. You know, you started building content there. Like, what was your plan from the early days besides just educating customers? Like, when you and your partner came together, was it like, we're just going to create a website about content, we're going to link out to these retailers? What was some of the major, like, you know, pushback you had from the retailers? Was there any pushback, or were they all just kind of open to the idea of finding another sales channel?
They were pretty open to it right away. I mean, these companies already had affiliate programs. Some of the companies were more on board than others. And we just, you know, naturally we gravitated, as long as the quality was to the level that we believed in, you know, we would gravitate towards them. It really was, we're a written content site, and we're working now, we're diversifying a bit on other things, but it really was just about getting our knowledge out there. And there's unlimited amounts. You know, at this point we have 400, you know, major articles on our website. We have thousands of other blog posts that answer specific questions. Everything that we've done is SEO based. We've never paid for advertising, and it's really just providing rich content. We believe that there was a market, that there were people who were looking for educational based answers as opposed to what you would refer to as transactional based, which, you know, the major
sales copy versus like true content. Yeah. Something I'm learning about the difference too, just in my own business, is like sales copy versus just good content, you know, and good content is something that can come out of me pretty easily, like in the written way. Sales copy is something I need to work on. You know, I'm just not great at pushing, you know, through copy or like, you know, getting that voice out. So definitely understand the difference, and can tell when you're being sold to versus when you're just being educated.
Yeah. And, you know, we're always looking, you know, obviously we're always looking to improve our conversion on our site, that the people who are reading the content, you know, we believe in the retailers that we partner with. So we're always looking to improve. But at the same time, you know, you're referring to Helzberg. A company like that is sitting on, you know, millions and millions of dollars of inventory that they have to move. We're not sitting on anything. We don't have any pressure to sell any particular person. If our sales dropped by 50% tomorrow, it wouldn't really affect our bottom line. Might affect, you know, our investment into more content and whatnot down the road, but we don't have that overhead, so we're not pressured to do what we call the hard sale. So we're able to just really focus on creating high quality content for those end consumers.
I love it. So before we move into the next part, once again, shout out to our sponsor, Fullscale.io, helping you build software teams quickly and affordably. If you're needing to add to your content or add to your development team, Fullscale.io is a great place to start. Michael, understanding where you guys like got started and the why and what you're trying to solve, like, where are you guys going now as we head into 2022 and beyond? Like, what's next for the Diamond Pro? You guys said you're you know, you're a content site, but kind of left a little bit of room there that maybe you guys are doing some other things. Like, you know, what's next for you guys?
Well, you know, we've definitely seen, and this is every company should always be looking at the trends and the way people are utilizing their site. But overall, I mean, you just look at the difference, the different ways that people are consuming media and interacting with media nowadays is just so different than it was even 4 or 5 years ago. I'd say 5 years ago, 90% of our readers were coming on a desktop, and now it's 85% are coming on mobile. And, you know, we used to do a steady amount of business answering personal emails, and we're still happy to do that. But most people aren't looking to type out a long email explaining their situation on their phones. And we saw that drop dramatically over the last 5 years. And we've pivoted more towards passive marketing and affiliate clicks on our site. And our business has grown tremendously during this time. But we're also looking towards the present and the future. In some ways, the present for us is the future because we see innovations in media, but that usually hits people in their, you know, teens and early 20s. That's not really the diamond buying demographic at that point. So we have a little bit of a runway there that we can adapt to. And, you know, the way people have consumed, digital content, video has really, gone through the roof. And we do have a YouTube channel, the Diamond Pro YouTube channel. And we're looking at different ways to reach out to those people and to really help people meet them where they're looking. We notice a lot of people want to, let's say, mimic celebrity engagement. So we're trying to do content for that. Engagement rings, not the actual proposals. You look at all the different media platforms, how to adapt to Instagram, how to adapt to TikTok are really, you know, important issues that every company is facing. So we're just trying to keep on top of it.
I love it. So moving into like more video, more audio, things like that, like this podcast, for example.
Exactly.
But I love that on the video side. You know, for me, my business is constantly a lesson and constantly learning as well. You know, it was at the beginning, you know, there's a lot of guys trying to do their own Amazon FBA thing. And so, you know, Instagram was a fine channel for that. If I'm looking for brands and manufacturers, that's LinkedIn. You know, there can be some on Facebook because a lot of those business owners or those manufacturers are existing on Facebook because it's just a different demographic of age there.
Right.
You were right about TikTok. Like, that's not probably your purchaser. But if you're playing long game, you know, TikTok is a great channel for entertainment type of content or educational type of content, like real quick and easy, like notice the difference in this one and this one, or like how to clean your diamond, or like, you know, things like that, how to maintain it, or like, you know, some little quick tips that, like, you know, when that age demographic gets older to the point where they are buying, they might have been consuming your content for a couple of years and have that trust and be like, I'm going to go to the Diamond Pro when I'm ready to buy.
Right.
Or like, you know, so I completely understand, and it's easier said than done as well to adapt
absolutely.
Your content when you've spent years creating content in a certain way, to now need to create that. I know, like, the podcast for me was a big, had to overcome a big challenge of my own mind, of having my voice just out here, you know, hours a week on a podcast, just talking. You can sound like an idiot, not used to being in front of the screen or the mic, you know, can sit and think about my pieces or my emails all day long, you know, all
exactly.
night long.
Some of our earlier videos are painful to watch.
Don't Skip watch
more.
You know, no, I'm with you on that. It's going to be super fun, and I'm going to have to subscribe just to stay up to date on what you guys are doing. And, you know, I'm always looking to be educated, and it is something that, I'm someone that can make a quick decision when I feel informed, and when I feel like confident about the subject, but can be one of the most indecisive people if I just don't feel like I have the information to make a good decision. Very much love what you guys are doing and love what's next for you guys. As a startup founder, and, you know, like, we're in 2021, what's some advice you have for just anyone listening today about, you know, starting something new, you know, in this landscape and being able to change? What's some advice you just give to any early founders that are tuning in?
I mean, this may be cliche, but I think every person, before they start out on whatever they're doing, they need to get some experience in sales. If you don't have experience selling, you're never going to make it as an entrepreneur. Doesn't matter what you're doing, you're always selling. I know growing up, my father was a nuclear physicist and an engineer. And he went out in the entrepreneurial world, and he did not have that sales, he didn't have it innate in him, and he never taught himself how to do it. And it didn't matter how good his idea was, he was never able to be successful in translating that idea into a business.
I love that.
And yeah, it's so important. It doesn't matter what you're doing. I mean, if you grew up with missionaries, I mean, their job is sales.
They're selling the gospel.
They're selling a higher authority. But whatever it is, you learn that from a very young age, and it carries with you no matter what we do. I don't actually engage in sales at this point in my life, but every negotiation we have with the partners, the online retailers that we work with, every negotiation that I'm making with different digital content companies, you're utilizing that ability to figure out how to make a transaction work best for yourself, and hopefully work best for the other people as well. So I think that's imperative for people to learn.
No, I think that is fantastic advice, and honestly, not something I've heard before. When I kind of open up that question, while I think it is maybe the most important thing you have as a startup founder, you have to sell yourself. You know, one thing my dad taught me, or that I learned by watching my dad, was the difference in being able to sell something that you believe in is completely different than maybe selling that inventory, the diamond inventory that you don't want to sell, that's just been sitting there on your shelf.
Yeah.
The same thing happens in e-commerce when brands are coming to me. We've sold out of everything that's great. And they're like, hey, I've got 100 left of each of these three. And I'm like, this is the shit. This is the shit that no one's buying. And you're wanting me to sell this. I hate this. I still am that way. But
sometimes that's the best sales work that can be. And it doesn't mean that you're selling somebody garbage, but you're finding the person who wants garbage.
Exactly.
I remember when we started, when I started at the manufacturing side, I was managing a $3 million inventory. And my first first month, I made this amazing sale. I sold like $350,000. I made a great profit margin on it. And I was talking to the founder of the company, was a guy named Leo Schachter. At that point, he was retired. And he was saying, listen, you can talk all you want about how great of a sale it is, but that profit margin means nothing until you sell the bottom 10% of your inventory.
Ooh, and, okay.
It was a good.
That's what would be lost if you didn't sell that.
Yeah, if I have to sell that for a 50% loss, then it doesn't matter. So I actually, at that point, I started focusing when I would get inventory in. I would first take the least desirable, and I would try to sell it, even if I sold it at a loss. And sometimes it looked ridiculous on my balance sheet. I would just move out the stuff that nobody was going to want. But then I'm just free. I know the numbers that I lost already, and I know how much I have to make in profit. Whereas, if I sell something for 10% profit, and then all of a sudden I'm only getting 20% losses on the other half, I'm breaking even. I'm not making any money, and there's no way I can move forward from that. And I'm just going to have dead inventory.
That's brilliant. Honestly, if that's the only thing you guys got from the show, I love it. It's kind of the same thing as you've got a hard day in front of you. You take on the hardest stuff first, whatever exactly. Time that takes, whatever, you get that out of the way. And then you can try to cruise through the day, crushing the stuff that you like doing, or that's easier to do. Brilliant. As we wrap up here, Michael, what are some ways that people can contact you besides just getting on, the Diamond Pro website? What are some ways that people can follow along on LinkedIn or connect with you?
Well, absolutely. I mean, diamonds.pro is our website, and that's really where we have all our content. You can definitely find us on Facebook, the Diamond Pro, Instagram, Diamond Pro Official, and as we mentioned before, the YouTube channel, Diamond Pro. We put out quite a bit of content there as well.
Oh, awesome. And we'll have all of his links in the bottom of the show when we post as well, so you guys can find him there. It's been an absolute pleasure pleasure having you on. Thanks again to our sponsor for today's episode, FullScale.io, helping you build software teams quickly and affordably. Michael, thank you, and enjoy the rest of your evening.
Thank you for having me. It was a blast.
Thank you, hustlers. We'll see you next time.
Startup Hustle's brought to you by FullScale.io, helping you build a software team quickly and affordably. Make sure you reach down and hit that subscribe button, then come find us on Instagram.
See you next time.